Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, Northbay Sox and Jacks. I'm Tom Alejandro on the board. SP Futures down 5. NASDAQ Futures up 850. Do we have the Professor Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing all right.
Well, good. I got all kinds of stuff to quiz you on as we go in terms of PE ratios and those kinds of things. So I hope you're ready.
I'll just have all my answers at the ready.
Well, just a sense of then and now, you know. Remember when Edith Bunker asked her about sex, and she said, we have it now and then, and she goes, mostly then, not now. You know, kind of a thing. And anyway, I don't know how we got on that subject, but what is up with you? I mean, I want to talk for sure about all the name, image, likeness stuff that's happening and the lawsuit, because it was a big discussion last night among a couple of sports mavens and attorneys that I happen to be hanging with, and so we'll talk a little bit about that. But obviously, the gorilla in the room tonight is the NVIDIA earnings, and everybody's convinced that yet again they will surprise to the upside. The stock that straddles like 8% of the stock, so the straddles like $80 some, $80. You know, for those that don't know, if you look at the, let me kick NVIDIA up here, make sure I got this right. NVIDIA is trading NVDA. Last time I checked, there we go. The stock is down $1.96 this morning, pre-market, 951.90, which is pretty close to its top. Last night, the 950 straddle. Okay, now 950 straddle is the combination of the call price and the put price, and it's I've got the puts at like 37-ish, and the calls at 42-ish. So we're talking roughly a $79 straddle, which can be interpreted as the market's essentially over-under on how far the stock's going to move, and it's after the earnings, which is a lot, you know, because obviously, let's call it $80 on a 950 stock is, what, 8.5% somewhere in there, Kevin? 9? 8.5, 9? That's a big move. And, of course, everybody's convinced it'll be to the upside. And when NVIDIA does that, or when any other stock like that does that, it seems to have lately the way of putting the, I'll use the term, the multipliers on PEs and revenue per share even higher. Like, we can just drive things higher and higher and higher. And it has been the way that if your strategy has been for the last several years that just put everything in, no fixed income, no anything, just put it all right in the high-tech stuff up until, this is essentially after a year ago, January. You had a big, you know, pretty big blip in the last part of 2022, but if you ignored that and became even a bigger buyer, which is what the buy-to-dippers tell you to do, you're pretty much fat and happy. So you've got, and this contributes to the kind of wealth bubble where people with stock are doing a hell of a lot more than just the schlumps that are just working. You know, whether that continues forever, who the hell knows. But anyway, Kevin, that's what's on the thing today. And if so, it's the stack. And I've got NVIDIA. Last night I did some stuff in here. I've got, you know, the thing is like 26 times revenue and 76 times PE. So the reason why those numbers are so high is because the stack is seriously running. I mean, when I say they're growing, they've been essentially doubling revenue year over year, and maybe will be for a while, it looks like. But But, you know, we're reaching a point where, you wonder if you're going to be able to double year over year. And if you do, if you can't, 26 times revenue is a massive. When I say that, when Cisco in 2000 reached like $60 or $65 a share, and from there it went to six. Now that's not predictive. There it went to six. It had reached like 10 or 11 times revenue. And just as a little trick, don't just look at PE, because PE can be anything. You can have a bad quarter and have a tremendous business. You could write something off. You could do all kinds of things. And so PE is, in the short run, is not all that indicative of how valuable a company is. It can be if you've been making money for years and all of a sudden you're not, but it depends on the company. But when you start talking about times revenue, it's really hard for somebody this size to double, Kevin. I mean, these guys have been doing it, but the flaw, I think, in the argument is they should bring everybody else with them. We're talking about the seven big-time stocks. We're talking Amazon, Apple, Tesla, Microsoft, Meta, Google, and NVIDIA. Now, I'm convinced, Kevin, after talking to you, Mavens, that it's entirely possible for NVIDIA's business to double. Might be possible for Tesla's to double. I don't know about Microsoft. They're too friggin' big. Can they double, really, without anybody else still being around? What do you think?
No, I think Microsoft is, we'll see. Well, I mean, they are at least trying to get into, certainly into the AI market, and they're hosting a whole bunch of stuff on AI this week. So they're making their play for it, but, you know, we'll see. We'll see. It's not the kind of thing that they've historically done.
I mean, yesterday I went through and did the same kind of math for Microsoft. Again, this is just educational. This is not buy or sell. I've got them at 37 times earnings, which is pretty high for Microsoft. And I got them at 13.4 times revenue, which for a company that size is really out there. And, you know, they're making this move into AI. Can they double their revenue, Kevin? I'm going to say no.
Well, you always got to be asking the question: Can they pull it off? Can they go where you know technology? I mean, technology is kind of a funky place to be under any circumstances, because it changes so rapidly, and you know what's yesterday's hot growth item is today's commodity item.
Well, therein lies the trick.
NVIDIA is going to have to face that music at some point too, so you know we'll see what happens.
Well, I mean, if Kevin and Chief, are we going to bring Andrew into this? Actually, Andrew is becoming a he's in tip-top shape now. He's working. He's not the Andrew we used to know. This guy's something different. He's always on time.
He's a lean, mean fighting machine.
Absolutely.
Now.
Matter of fact, guess what he's taking? He's taking the medieval broadsword stuff. Not fencing, but we get the old King Arthur swords.
Yeah.
Actually kind of sounds like fun, doesn't it?
You can't conceal those very well, but can you carry them in Chicago?
Well, you got to have the big... What's the thing you put the sword in?
Might be a good safety play.
Yeah, what's the name of the thing you stick it in? A
sheath.
No, that's a knife. Is it a scabbard?
If you say so, I'll believe you.
It's been a while since I watched Robin Hood. Ivanhoe. Anyway, we're talking about it. I mean, just so people get a clue as to how big. I mean, I think everybody in the show knows. Hey, Microsoft's a pretty big company. $236 billion a year in revenue. Now, is AI going to cause that to be 500? You think, Kevin?
It might be that AI is going to be how they defend that revenue, because you got to start looking at the things that artificial intelligence is doing on the low end. So, you know, and that's, you know, you see people starting to get into the market, but they're getting in running apps like, you know, ChatGPT and stuff like that. It's very, very low end application of artificial intelligence. And I think, you know, people are enamored of it, but that's not, you know, that's not the high end, the stuff that really sucks up processors and requires a whole lot of processing power, which is what NVIDIA provides. And so there's a lot of people in there, but they're going to all start climbing the, you know, climbing the functionality market, and then we'll see what happens with it.
Well, that's my, you just, believe it or not, you just answered my question maybe without even knowing it.
Well, I pretty much knew it.
Okay. I'm saying, well, you alliterated to the fact, and that's what you do for a living, you alliterated to the fact that for them to be involved in this is probably the exact way they ought to be involved, because that it'll enable them to defend their revenue and maybe even increase it from the spot that it is, which is really hard to do from that number, I think is what you said, fully exposed. But my point is, I'm agreeing with you, which I'm not supposed to do ever, but I'm agreeing with you, but it's priced like it's you and I and Andrew with a hot dog stand about to have four. It's priced like a massive growth company at 13 times revenue. They don't match, Kevin.
Yeah, so the, you know, so there's a lot of people believing in them for the long haul, and it's not, you know, betting on Microsoft has not been a horrible bet for anybody, so I'm not criticizing that. But what I'm saying is, what has Microsoft done historically? What business has Microsoft been in more than anything else?
They buy any business that's decent, and they have zero thoughts about any kind of antitrust. That's an aside.
Well, yeah, but that, you know, but what business have they been in? I mean, basically, they sell code.
Yeah,
well, they sell operating system code. They sell, you know, a lot of application code, the whole Microsoft Dynamics series, all of those kinds of things, and that's, you know, that is what they do. AI coding is not, you know, it's not what I would consider a high end application of the technology. So, you know, is Microsoft better be on that train? Otherwise, they're going to be out of business.
Well, and what we're kind of zeroing in on is, and when you talk about markets and market pricing, despite what you hear all day long, I mean, it is pretty scary, actually. All day long is, somehow I think, even though this has been a very odd time for the last decade, really, you have to, you don't have to, but it's wise, I think, in one man's opinion, to separate yourself from how much you like a company and how well they're performing to where they're trading. Sometimes they just don't match up, Kevin, even if you love the place. I mean, I've thought Procter & Gamble was one of the best-run companies going back, you know, 35 years. And I always thought they had a premium on their stock price because of it, and I didn't want to buy it, even though I liked, you know, that was before, you know, the Fed poured money in the system and everything just went up, because, I mean, it's pretty hard to say that something wasn't a buy along the way, because obviously everything was a buy. We're at all-time highs, right? But you can love somebody's antique car and say, man, I always wanted a, you know, 57 Oldsmobile convertible. Okay, how much? Well, 400 grand. Well, I don't want it that bad.
You don't love it 400 grand.
I don't love it 400 grand. So, you know, what I'm saying is, I happen to think that Microsoft is amazingly well-positioned. I can't go 13 times, 4 times revenue on a stock that's been around that it is that big and is that old. I just can't, you know. So, but, well, maybe if it drops someday, you know, I'll be all over it for my clients. But right now, it's, I'm just saying. Boy, talk about switching gears. You and I and Lou have been going back and forth on some of this. Let's cover it for a little bit, because it not only is interesting, Kevin, this NIL stuff, it's also, there's going to be, I wish we were young again, because maybe we would be writing, how many PhD theses you think are going to be written on this explosion and essentially a whole new, I'll use the term cottage industry, although the cottages are pretty big. Why don't you explain what's going back and forth with this kid in Miami and then the Florida, right? Because it's been, remember I was talking last week about some guy who was supposed to go into Ohio State and got essentially bought out of the deal by Miami for some huge amount of money. And now he's going there, some kid from Chicago. What is the nature of the contracts you're even signing? You're not signing, from what you and Luke say, if I'm a scholarship athlete someplace, boy, imagine that, I'm still signing the same NCAA deal that I probably was signing 25 years ago. There's no, I mean, the school might be paying me a little money now if the conference says it's okay and I can get, you know, $5,000 a month during the season or whatever, whatever the schools are, quote, paying. Is, they're still calling it, what's the term they use? It's still
a stipend.
It's, well, it's a stipend of some kind.
Stipend.
But what other contracts am I signing with these other people? I mean, I know, I think I know, that like the guy from Notre Dame, Hartman, who came with, he got his deal with Under Armour. I'm guessing he signs a deal with Under Armour, and that's a real contract. But what is all this other mess? I mean, what do you, there's all these different alumni booster clubs and the places, yeah, that are paying.
They're collectives is what they're referred to them as, and they exist to basically, they're the payroll department. I don't know what else to call them. And what they do is, in theory, when they started, I think it was to say, we have 850,000 divided by 85 scholarship players. Therefore, that would be a thousand each, or 10,000 each, whatever the number is. Do the math. You do the math for me. That was originally, but of course they've started using it to say, well, the stars, we're gonna give more to the stars because that's how you recruit, and so we had that. And so the issue, and you referred to this a little bit, is that we have a player who's filed a lawsuit now against the University of Florida saying he was promised a certain amount of money and it never materialized. And he's not just suing the people involved in the collective.
But now he actually went
he
there.
He is suing. He is filing a lawsuit against the university too.
Now he actually went there. Did not explode into the starting quarterback role that they thought, and end up transferring somewhere else. And now he's saying he didn't get whatever he was promised while he was there.
Yep.
And I think the people who are named are the coach, some auto dealer guy, and somebody else, right? There's three people?
Yeah.
Well, the coach, the school, and the auto dealer guy, right?
Exactly. So he's saying basically they breached their agreement. Now, what he had signed, I don't know. I don't know what he had actually had signed and sealed and delivered and put in writing. So that would be lesson number one, is never, if you think you have a contract, make sure it's written.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I wonder if let's just pick one of the ways, because one of the ones we talked about a few weeks ago was a group of boosters that, of course, want their contribution to be tax deductible. So they set up one of these tax deductible places, and they so you send them the money in, you get to deduct it, and it's a charitable organization to where they send the kid out to a hospital to talk to people twice a week for a couple hours, and they pay them, what, $600 an hour to go or something like that?
Something generous.
Wondering, is that a, if you don't show up for practice, do you not get to go that night, or is this a one-year deal that I get a certain amount of hours per week and it's guaranteed? Is it, if you go, if we send you, if we like the way you're practicing, we'll pay you, otherwise no? I mean, I have no idea what it's like. It could be any one of those things, considering the people involved.
Well, it could be, and that's a good point. If I'm paying you to make appearances, to do photo shoots for advertising, if I'm paying you for any of that kind of stuff, and I need you here on a certain day and a certain time, and that conflicts with practice, who wins that one?
No, what I meant was, if you all of a sudden are slacking off, is the penalty you don't get to go that week and get paid?
Well, wouldn't that be interesting?
I don't
know the mechanics of it, Tom, and it probably would be really cool to sit down with someone who's a recent graduate and talk through how that process works. Because I don't think anybody who's in the system right now wants to really talk about it.
Well, I'm gonna step out on a gangplank here and say, I doubt very seriously if if young Andrew is our son, can you imagine that? If Andrew's going to get a deal that says, I guarantee...
More like grandson, Tom.
Grandson, okay, yes. That I guarantee... I mean, let's put it this way. I'm going to lob one out there and say, I doubt very seriously that somebody is going to ink something that says, we guarantee you, Andrew, 6 hours a week at this hospital for $600 an hour for at least a year. I can't imagine that that contract is out there. But you know what? Maybe it is.
Yeah, wouldn't the contract be more like you're at our beck and call?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Can I test?
At any rate, so there's a lot going on with that. You know, what was promised, what was delivered, and I think the interesting part of this is that the school is party to the lawsuit, because the schools, technically, there is a whole arm's length relationship here. The rule is that they are not allowed to say, you're here for your recruiting visit weekend, and by the way, here's our collective representative, and now it's time for you to spend some quality time with this person. It's all supposed to be, you know, kept at least an arm's length. And what they're saying is, what the lawsuit is alleging is, no, it's not arm's length. And I am sure the school is going to do everything it can to get out of it, to get itself separated from the lawsuit and say, not us. This is something that, you know, take it up with your collective people, sue them, because they're the ones that made the promise.
Kevin,
if that's going to fly, but I'm sure that's what they're going to try. Because at this point, you know, and I've been saying this for a long time, this is just this quote, arm's length relationship they have is nothing more than an attempt to evade the athletes being classified as employees of the university. And, you know, this is under the category, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it might be a duck. I think these, you know, somebody is going to sue them. It's going to show up. It's going to show up in a workman's comp case. It's going to show up in something, but it's going, you know, one of these is going to break through and they're going to say, you are employees of the university, and the rest of this arm's length stuff is just a whole load of crap. And, it will be interesting to see what happens. So while I think the mechanics of this particular case are kind of interesting, I'm more interested in the stuff that's really going to shape what happens next.
Well, dig into the, you know, over the years, we've talked so much about this, and really on every subject, on Stacks and Jacks, that sometimes, you know, I can remember all, pretty much everything we talked about, Kevin, I'm reminded of it, but I can't really remember the people involved. But I have a real, some part in my elephant memory. We had a long discussion, you and I, and I think you might have been on with Lou. Wasn't there a case involving Florida, and I think it had to do with a young lady who was, she volleyball or was she something, that was like, somehow or another she had this modeling thing going or whatever, and I positive that there was an auto dealer involved. I wonder if it's the same guy, and if this is round two for Florida and that guy. You remember that at all?
No.
I'm at the quiz.
I don't remember the case. You must have been talking about it with Lou.
Because there was something about, I don't know if she was they were guaranteeing her some modeling stuff or something. I don't know if she was volleyball or basketball or what she was. But I'm positive there was something having to do with some auto dealer. Maybe if one of the listeners remembers, please enlighten us. But this might be round two for this auto dealer. Even though it wasn't.
You're saying this auto dealer is kind of shady?
Well, no, he's given the place millions of dollars. What's he charging for a car? What makes you want to go buy a car from the guy if he's got that much money? Just saying. I mean, good Lord. It's like saying, gee, I'll let Chief be my investment advisor. By the way, well, how do you get $5 billion? You know, that type of thing. Anyway.
So, we'll see how it goes. I gave you that sort of interesting little twist, too, and that's the WNBA and the Las Vegas Aces. Now, the Las Vegas Aces are the defending
champions. Okay, explain this. I know what you're talking about. Tell me else you're talking about.
Yeah, they're the best team in the WNBA and have been for a few years. So the league is now investigating and trying to put the brakes on a deal that the city of Las Vegas, basically the tourism people, cut with the individual players on the team. But it's basically every player gets $100,000. So it's sort of like one of these collectives.
Yeah.
It's only for professional basketball players. If the Las Vegas convention and tourism people had cut the deal directly with the team, that would be a violation of the salary cap that they have.
What do you think Scottie Pippen's thinking about this right now?
Yeah, Scottie Pippen doesn't think. I've never known him to think, so unless he was on the basketball
court. What do you mean? He hired accounting firm to watch his agent, and hired a law firm to watch the accounting firm, and when the agent screwed him, he ended up getting paid by those guys.
Yeah. Okay, so here, let's get back on track here.
Yeah.
So what they're saying is, what everybody is claiming is, hey, we contacted everybody's agent, and they were all on board with it, so we're proceeding with this. And so they're saying it's legitimate, and the league is saying, you're just throwing the whole team over the salary cap.
Since one is the agent.
Individuals over their max contracts. And, of course, you know, you look at that and say, well, you know, that's kind of crappy for the league to be doing it that way. But the league is trying, you know, they don't make money. They still don't make money, even though their attendance is up and the whole Caitlin Clark phenomenon is going on. They don't make money. They're subsidized by the NBA, and they're trying to grow the league and put it on a stable financial footing. So they have a big interest in trying to maintain their salary cap, and that's why it's such a hot button item for them.
Well, this is so amazing, Kevin, the way this thing is all breaking out. Since when do agents become arbiters of any sort of justice? It's okay with the agent. It's okay. You realize what you just said? They're the new Supreme Court justices.
Well, no, but what they're trying to do is cut. They want to use the whole team, but they're cutting individual deals via the agents. That's why I said when they contacted the agents that they got involved. You know, they don't reach out and contact, you know, Asia Wilson or Jackie Young or any of them. They don't reach out and contact them individually. They contact their agents.
I need an agent.
I'll be your agent, Tom.
What was the commercial with the two ducks walking along, and one duck says, "We need a new agent. We're getting screwed." The commercial
is gone, man.
I think we need a new agent. We're getting screwed. When the Bulls had the horrible contract with Scottie Pippen, you know, should the city have risen up and taken care of it because he was a Chicago treasure? I mean, what are we doing here,
Kevin? Oh, but Scottie Pippen did have the ability to go out and sign advertising deals. Even, you know, Michael Jordan, even before he got to his last couple of years with the Bulls, and they were able to pay him 1 year at a time, you know, basically $30-40 million a year. But he was under a contract as well that was below market for the NBA. But Michael Jordan was making so damn much from Nike and Gatorade and people like that it didn't, you know, other than competitive and wanting to have the best contract in the league, there was nothing there that, nobody was crying poor for him. If Scottie Pippen wanted to get, you know, advertising revenue, he could have, but that would have required a better personality.
Yeah, well, and wanting to do all that stuff, there's no doubt about that. It just as we... You just wonder, it's almost on the same, we have to go to break here, Kevin, it's almost on the same page as, I mean, how do you value this stuff? I mean, how much is sports being valued? I mean, how ridiculous, or not ridiculous, maybe, how much is it? Everybody's going to do nothing but watch sports for the rest of their life and bet on it, so all these people are worth 10 times more. It's almost like looking at some of these stocks. It's sort of the same thing. We've flooded, in one man's opinion, we've flooded the world for some people with dollar bills. Most people know, but some people, if you're in that group, the world is awash with cash. And if you're not, Well, you're like, we're becoming like the serfs in the Middle Ages, unfortunately. S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures up 8. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, on the board. S&P futures down 8, NASDAQ futures up 50 cents. The NASDAQ had a new record yesterday, so did the S&P, I believe. Dow was down a little bit, so not so much there. Again, today the big news is the NVIDIA earnings after the close. Right now NVIDIA is trading down a whole 56 cents, 953.30, which has got to be close to being a high in there. Around the rest of the world here. Do we care about the rest of the world? I guess so. DAX down 55.3%, FTSE down 32.4%, CAC around down 51.6%, so down a little bit. UK inflation misses estimate. There you go. A little worse than expected, evidently. Or in Asia, Nikkei down 329.8%, Hang Seng down 25.1%, Shanghai up 57 cents. Let's call that one flat. U.S., yesterday, the Dow was up 66, they were up 66. The S&P up 13, NASDAQ up 37. Bonds. 10-year up 4 basis points, 4.45. Again, a lot of this market rally in the last few weeks because it doesn't look like it's going to go to 5 anytime soon, the way the Fed is talking. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.54. Japan up 3 basis points, 1%. Who'd have thunk it? After all these years, 1%. Tomorrow I'll dig back and find out the last time it was 1%. I'm thinking maybe we're talking decades, but I'll find out for sure. Oil down 62 cents, 78.04. Brent down 64 cents, 82.24. Natural gas unchanged, 267. RBOB down 2 cents, 248. We've got gold down another 940, 24.16. Still over 2,400, but still it's not looking like it's heading up here like it was almost every day. Silver down 4 cents, 32.04. Copper down 11 cents, 498. Kind of the first meaningful drop in copper in quite a while. Foreign exchange. By the way, we have Fed meeting minutes today, too, which people on TV are all agog about, but I don't think they're ever really tradable. Euro, 108, kind of where it's been. British pound, 127 minutes, maybe a little higher. But dollar's been steady. Crypto, Bitcoin up another 501, 69,743 on a tear. Ether's been up 20% in 2 days. So I'm not so sure what that ETF even does. Maybe Kevin does. Anyway, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports? Cubs, 10 innings. I didn't make it to the 10th.
Yeah, we have some wins from all our favorite sports teams this week. It is Wednesday, May 22nd here in Chicago. It is 6:43 in the morning. But yeah, we had some wins in sports. The White Sox won over the Blue Jays 5-0. Cubs won over the Braves 4-3. And the Diamondbacks won over the Dodgers 7-3.
It's always good when the Dodgers lose.
That is good. Moving over to Chicago weather, it is currently partly sunny skies. We're at 65 degrees. We're going to have a high of 78, and that's going to hit around 4 p.m. today. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 65 degrees. They're going to have a high of 95 today, and they're going to have clear skies as well. Over to Chicago traffic, no major accidents to report, but traffic has built pretty heavily and quickly today. If you're on the inbound, expect delays coming in from the Kennedy, the Eisenhower, and the Stevenson. If you're on the outbound, things are looking a little bit better, but things are pretty clogged up near the middle of the Eisenhower around Austin Boulevard. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, what did you... I guess we can talk about this a little more in the extent that I'm really... I don't know what causes me to do this, because I'm sure as hell not an attorney, but I just wonder how much of this stuff is actually written down that these people are allegedly getting. And it can't be more. The scholarship, refresh my memory, scholarship is a renewable one-year deal, right? Even though pretty much in our lifetime, your quote, I use the term better schools, really looked at it as a four-year engagement for the athlete, correct?
Yeah, and I think they pretty much still do in that, and I only mean this in the specific, because you're right about the quote better schools or the somewhat more ethical schools. It's when they recruit them, they promise them a 4-year. So what do they do after that if they really want to renege on the promise? Well, let me see. What would you do if you wanted to get out of that? Well, you can make life miserable for the guy. So, the practice would be you'd refer to it as running off a guy. That's not unusual at all. There's a certain amount of leeway where you can say you can stay. We can put you on, sort of an injury type of situation where you can stay on scholarship at the school, but you're off the team. There's all kinds of shady things that they can do.
What
and I imagine in those situations too, now when you start saying, okay, so what are we going to do in those situations? What happens to your NIL money if you kind of get pushed off the team? That's an interesting question, isn't it?
Depends how it's written. If it's written in a sense that the top I don't know if it's scholarship, whatever, the top 15 offensive linemen get $5,000 a month, and all of a sudden you're deemed not to be one of the top 15. I don't know what does that even mean. I mean, you're not, if you come out as a walk on, you're not going to get paid, right? Or are you?
Well, that's out there too. Now as far as recruiting, they're using that as a recruiting tactic and saying, we can recruit you as a walk-on, and still give you $500,000 a year or something. So why do you care if you have to pay tuition? We'll just kind of bundle it in and make it part of the deal for you, and that's a way for them to exceed the scholarship limits.
As usual, Kevin, you come up with something that I never thought of. I wonder, Saban
so,
just...
So now they're talking about having legislation that says we're going to restrict the rosters to 85. Sorry, walk-ons, you're out. Sorry, more traditional walk-ons.
Are they for once in their life being ahead of the game?
I don't know if they're being ahead of the game, but, there certainly are your... not necessarily Rudy, which was a charming story and all, but a little bit different from the typical walk-on. But you do have guys that they want to be on the team. They're and some of them actually do get a chance to play. Let me give you a different example. If you're going to limit the roster to 85, and you want to use a guy like Jordan Faison at Notre Dame. Faison's there on a lacrosse scholarship. He's a really good lacrosse player, but he's arguably their best wide receiver as a freshman last year.
All right, now he, from what I understand, this is from our buddy Dick Belden, I haven't seen in ages. You can't do that.
They did it.
But I mean, there's from what I understand. And this is going back a few years because I haven't seen him since COVID. There's preferences in which scholarship is worth more than another one. I'm sure you knew that. In other words, right.
Is this sport? Do you have to play a year at that sport before you can go out on the other team without it being charged as a scholarship against your limit?
Okay, but here's where the nuance to the rule that I'm asking you. If let's put it this way. Football was, I use the term, the superior sport. So if I'm on a football ride and I decide to play baseball, I can do it as a scholarship athlete. If I'm on a baseball ride, I can't play football, because it's considered hiding a football scholarship if I'm over the limit.
Yeah, so what you have to do is, yeah, it works sort of like that, and there is a pecking order to this, but the catch is you can still play, you just can't, how do I want to say it? You just count against the scholarship limit, even though you count against the baseball scholarship limit too. If there's, you know, if you have an opening on your roster, then go ahead and play. Otherwise, you got to wait a year.
So the Irish must not have used all 85 of their rights.
Could very well be. I don't know.
See, I think
I'd have to go back and count. But if you're looking at that situation, and now they had used it all, but he's really a sophomore now, and he's, you know, he can legitimately go out for football. If he is technically a football walk-on, are they going to legislate that?
I don't think, we need to check this out, but from my understanding, this kid cannot play football unless his scholarship is transferred to football and counts against the 85, in which case he'd be free to still play lacrosse, from what I understand. In other words, when back in our day, when we had you weren't there yet, but my sophomore year, when all those people got hurt and all that stuff on the basketball team, and Willie and Mike Townsend were able to play basketball, Era said, go ahead and play and help Digger out because he had nobody else. That, I think, is perfectly legit. I don't think the basketball players would go play football without being counted. There's a pecking order to this. I don't know which is higher, baseball or lacrosse, but it's probably baseball, I would guess, but I'm not sure. Anyway, we'll have to ask somebody on this one. But I guess what I'm saying, Kevin, is if you think the other way, if you think like a knucklehead like I do, if all of a sudden the article was written regarding the walk-ons was a way to penalize Notre Dame because they have walk-ons, because the guy basically had a burr up his ass about Notre Dame that wrote the article. But if all of a sudden Alabama is renowned for essentially holding guys at like a junior college, and if somebody leaves, they all of a sudden jump on scholarship. They're always right at the 85 limit, where a lot of schools have real trouble. I mean, I will bet you, Kevin, Stanford has a real trouble getting over 65 on the scholarship thing. It's hard to get 85 guys that aren't moving or running around the place. But if all of a sudden Alabama could now pay 100 guys, well, all of a sudden, what good is your limit? The tuition in Alabama is not that high. What's it, 20 grand or more? I mean, for out-of-staters, it's probably more. But if all of a sudden, if you think of it going the other way, why not have 120 people here? You're all paying. If you got the dough, then what's the difference, right? They're not really walk-ons. They're going to practice, and someday it'll be like the baseball moves. This guy left the 85-man roster, and this guy's on, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so you might do it like that. You might have a total scholarship limit for the whole school, you know, for the whole athletic department. I don't know how they solve this, but this is This is sort of a typical scenario. I mean, this happens in the world all the time, is where, you know, the rules get made up one at a time, and by the time you get to the end of the end of rulemaking, you find out that this is just such a twisted mess that you really need to throw up your hands and start over again.
I don't know if there are any rules right about it. It doesn't seem like everything that we talked about today, I can think of a way to get around it, Kevin. I mean, I'm not gonna.
Right. So you make another rule, and you keep doing that, and you keep doing that, and by the time you're done, it's just this cobbled together mess that makes no sense anymore.
It sounds like the tax code.
That's where they are, because this isn't just an NIL issue. This isn't, you know, this has been going on for a long time, where they've been playing, you know, it's almost spy versus spy. You know, you figure out how to break a rule, I'll figure out how to make a new one that prevents you from breaking that rule, and then you'll figure out a workaround on that one. And so this has been going on all along. It's just, you know, there have been a couple of other things that have, A, brought it to the forefront more and made it, you know, more newsworthy, because it was all hush-hush before. And the other part of it is that it's just, we've sort of accelerated the speed of what happens.
Well, you know, it starts to remind me of the tax code.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Because every time, when you start out with a place where there's no common sense behind the rules to start with, then all of a sudden you start walking down this road. It comes down to, you know, I had a discussion with one of the. There's different sides of this story. God, there's a million different sides of the story. It's like a circle or so many sides. There are people, and I absolutely, matter of fact, you know, I have discussions with them. There are people who actually believe that nothing has changed, Kevin. That there was always some guys getting a few bucks here and there, and it's just now out in the open and it's bigger. I can't disagree more. It's like saying, and I don't know, it's like saying a stream running a little high is the same as a record flood. It's not even close. I mean, yeah, were there always floods? Well, yeah, they made it to that line over there for 200 years, and now my house is floating. Ah, it's the same thing. It's just a flood. It's just a little more. No, it's not. This is so totally different than somebody giving some player, you know, $100 for a bus fare home to his dad's funeral 50 years ago than the man in the moon, I think. I mean, I don't know which where you are on this one. It's not the same. The motivations are the same.
What it illustrates is how much money is in the sport, how much money is there, was there to be made all along.
Well, not really. I mean, how can you?
Sure it does.
Well, I mean, if you go, there's a bar in Michigan City. I don't know if you've been in there with me. I think it's still there, but it's an old Irish bar, and they got all the stuff up there for the years when, like, 48, 49, the Leahy teams. Kevin, you had a home crowd. You played 5 home games, and there was no bowl games, and you were on TV. Was there even TV? Now, if one of those kids got a few bucks by a booster because he needed to get home or something, or for the sport coat they made you wear that they couldn't pay for it, does anybody think that's even close to what's going on today? I mean, come on. The money was not there.
No, but I think you're being a little idealistic about what was.
Oh no, I didn't say that you didn't that nothing went on. I'm just saying the amount of money is totally different. We're not even. I mean, when I was in school, way after, didn't the cap on an assistant coach be $60,000? I don't remember Joe's Pizza giving the guy another 50. Do you?
Do you remember that FBI investigation a few years
ago?
Yeah. So what were the players getting then? Do you remember some of the stuff that they were citing?
No, I do remember some of it, but not the numbers.
Yeah, I remember Bruce Bowen getting $100,000, and it was from Louisville, but it was laundered via Adidas, I think. And you know, that was big money, but he was a really good player, but he wasn't the top player. So I would imagine that there was a whole lot of money then too. Is it, you know, is it $2 million a year like you see some of the athletes getting now? No, but the money was still pretty big.
Well, I mean, go back
to the Fab Five at Michigan.
When does a matter of degree change things? I mean, Kevin, I'm trying not to be that naive. I know. I've heard Chuck Muncy never lived in a dorm. He lived on a beach house in California, right? I mean, I think maybe OJ got some scratch. He never went to class. I mean, I'm saying, but others, I don't know that it was that paying people exorbitant amounts of dough in a Big Ten school was ever there. I don't think Iowa ever had people staying on a beach. Do you?
Well, and I don't know that there was a team payroll, so that was different, and that's, you know, sort of with some of these collectives, that is what they have, is essentially there's a team payroll. So, yeah, I agree, but all we've really done is just change the rules a little bit, but it's still
We've changed the money.
In concept, it's not any different from what was happening.
I can't disagree there. I guess on the trading floor back when I thought it was pretty darn straight, certainly on the board of trade floor, which is a little different, were people paying some way to get somebody's orders? Yeah, maybe you could find somebody who did it. Was it blatant out in the open? Every single trade is paid for, and people trade ahead of other people. No, I mean it's not even close to being the same issue, Kevin. Even though the motivation, I mean, hey, what can I say? We can't invent a new sin, right? They're all in the Ten Commandments. I mean, they're, people have always been the same. I mean, I get that part.
I'm going to work on that, though. It'd be fun to try.
No, it'd be fun to try to invent a new fetish.
Oh, okay.
You can't do that either because they've already been invented before. Just saying.
Well, I'll work on it. I'll report back.
We're too old to work on that.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
I mean, did you ever see the Kama Sutra, the unabridged version with all the positions of sex? I got news for you. We're not doing any of those. Those guys are pretty limber.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, you know, I'd have to work out for a while.
Those people would have been in what's that amazing show where guys do all the crazy stuff when they're on the bikes and back and forth and they can touch their head to their butt and stuff with the.
Circus. Is that like America's Got Talent? Or
no, Cirque
like
du Soleil.
Oh, Cirque du Soleil. Oh, yeah, or what are the Blue Man Group or somebody like that? Yeah,
hey, okay. I have a quick. We don't have actually, we have like no time, but hey, you know what? You got a dash?
I can hang for a minute.
I would like to go over when Jan comes down. When he's on, I would just pile him in. But I'd like to go over this. The new Republican economic policy that I was going over yesterday. I was kind of stunned at that, weren't you?
A little bit, but in many ways, no. So yeah, if you want to go ahead, I'll hang for a minute.
It is stunning that the perceived differences between the two people running for office, and I'm not saying there aren't personality differences, there sure as hell are, how people of both sides are kind of moving to this sort of populist thing that is, to me, not all that accurate. Real quick, I was kind of stunned the other night. I was watching, I don't know what possessed me to watch Channel 9 news, but they had a review. Some lady came out and gave a review of inflation in the food stores and what's causing it all. God, Kevin, talk about the dumbing down of America. Well, we had this bird flu issue, we had something else issue, and by the way, we had some supply chain and this. Never once mentioned money supply, never once. What the Fed did? Do we want people in this country to be stupid, or what do we want? I mean, it's eight.
You're saying it's all a litany of excuses, sort of like John Belushi and Blues Brothers with Carrie Fisher telling her all the reasons why he had to leave her at the altar.
Why don't we just bring Jan? Andrew, can you bring Jan right in? Andrew's somewhere.
No, he's here, but looks like he'll be joining us in just a second or two.
All right. I'll dig this thing up here, and this is a article by, here we go, by Eamon Jabbers, who's one of the political guys at CNBC, and I think does a pretty nice job. I mean, I've watched him forever, and it's, I mean, if you were to go back to I'm going to say the traditional Republican economic policy, it probably dates back to Reaganomics, doesn't it, Kevin? Where it's if you want to criticize it, you'd say it's amazingly trickled down. Corporations are the solution, not the problem. You want your taxes low, which you know I think most people would kind of like. Anyway, it was that sort of a system. It says here the new people, they argue that the Reaganite low tax, low regulation, free market ideology has not worked out very well for American workers, but has worked out enormously well for corporate elites. You know what, Kevin, before we dig into the actual nuts and bolts of the do stuff, when we get John, I'm gonna say that my issue with Reaganomics. How can I say this? I don't really have a problem with it, Kevin, in terms of economic theory. I think at the same time, our buddy Dutch did this. I think there was a lot of really good ideas in there. It's almost very much to the people are going to be shocked at this, the kind of libertarian stuff that Milton Friedman espoused that I'm actually very much in favor of. I'm not as far out there as Hal, but I'm pretty much in favor. But the issue for that is if you think competition is going to get free market thing, you have to try and maintain competition. You have to try and maintain the free market. In other words, given unto itself, especially with certain things happen locally or whatever, every industry is always trying to become less free market. Nobody wants a free market. You think every soybean producer on earth doesn't wish they could control the prices? I mean, it's not intuitively terrific for you to be in a free market, right? And on a trading floor, we loved it because, you know, that was our game. We wanted things to be fair and open, okay? And we thought we were good enough to make money doing it anyway, but that's not the rest of the world. I think that at the same time, Reagan essentially shut down antitrust. I don't think you could do both things, Kevin. I think that's where the flaw took place. I think right now we don't have free markets in just about every industry. And that's a problem. We've allowed.
Well, you know, John can chime in on this too. But Hal talks about this a lot. He really, and if you know, if you follow his tweets too, when the government injects itself into a market, then it is less free, and so we're not really talking about capitalism as we know it. And you know, sometimes you can look at it and you can say, well, this is a well-intended regulation. It might even be necessary regulation, but make no mistake about it: every time the government gets involved, you're going to have less freedom in the market, and the people who are going to benefit the most are going to be the big corporations, not the small corporations. It happens that way over and over and over again. So it's not, you know, this is not just a theoretical statement. It's a statement of what actually happens time after time.
Well, morning, everyone.
Hey, how are you, John? John, we're going Good. Through this stuff on the new Republican economic stuff, and I guess it says the new thinking urges conservatives to reject the kind of traditional Republican economic dogma championed for decades in Washington by groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Business Roundtable. Because they're saying whatever came out of Reaganomics, which I'm not so sure you can pin it all on that, whatever came out of that all of a sudden is had this massive disposition of you know, that it hasn't worked out so well for most of Americans. Now, I don't know if it's the policy itself or the inability. I think, and you guys critique me, that it is, to me, it's seemingly industry after industry essentially finding themselves a way to not be competitive. That's the problem, in one man's opinion. We've had some advancements in things that keep some of these guys in line. I'll give you a real quick example. Everybody knows, probably boredom like I'm doing work on the deck in my place, and I go to Home Depot and I look at all the fasteners. Now the fasteners are out of control in terms of prices. And I went online, and there's probably three, four places that if you know about it. I mean, I use a place called Fessner's Plus in Iowa. These people are terrific. And I got stuff for roughly 25, 30, maybe 35% cheaper at Home Depot. They shipped it for free, Federal Express, and I got it in 2 days. I'm like, I know that people have found, you know, a workaround on having to go to one place or two places. Yet, what if there was no online stuff? Can you imagine the power these places would have? The Home Depot and the Lowe's? I mean,
the power they have because of online sales, too. I mean, that's kind of been a... They're the first point of attack for a lot of people. They go there to see what the price is there, and that becomes their baseline. And, you know, they start there, and that of course is a huge advantage for any retailer.
Well, plus it's if you're going, I mean, if you're putting tile in your bathroom, and the wife or the girlfriend, they're going to pick the tile, not you. I'm assuming if there's a special on the tile, they're going to want to, I'm not accusing the ladies of the world. They're going to want to get it done. You're probably not going to, if the glue is $50 when it ought to be $35, you're probably not going to go home and wait a week for that to show up. You make your money anyway. But here's the list. I'll just comparing the Reaganomics again, which is the low tax, low regulation. This is the policy proposals for a second Trump administration. Impose a 10% global tariffs on imports. I'm going to say Ronnie Reagan is turning over his grave on that one. Not saying it's good, I'd be a bad. I'm just saying this is so different. Block American firms from investing in China. Block Chinese firms from access to U.S. capital markets. Impose harsh penalties for employees who fail to comply with immigration laws. Wow, imagine everybody in all the deeply conservative country clubs going to jail because they've employed those guys forever. Eliminate H-2A and H-2B programs for seasonal and agricultural workers. I don't know how you don't have seasonal workers, but it's award HB1B visas to the highest paying employers. And it's kind of weird. Create a $100 billion National Development Bank for critical infrastructure. Sounds like Biden, for God's sake. Repeal the National Environmental Policy Act of 1970, which I don't know what that one was. Reform corporate bankruptcy to mandate 6 months severance for all employees and 1 year's tax liability for local communities. Now, if you don't have any money, I'm not sure exactly how you mandate that, but that's another... Require private firms hired by public pension funds to publish annual performance data. Here's a good one. Impose a financial transaction tax of 10 basis points on secondary market sales of stocks, bonds, and derivatives. This is coming out of Republicans. Ban stock buybacks and eliminate tax deductibility of interest. Are we going after corporate CEOs? What are we doing here? I mean, some of these don't sound horrible, but can you imagine them popping this out when Dutch was alive?
No.
What do you make of this?
Never stopped it.
Man, this is way to the left of me. This stuff.
Go ahead, John.
It looks like it's really coming out of left field, but that's because
no pun intended.
The climate generally has just gone completely off the rails, so that this would be unthinkable kind of stuff from a Republican, the platform maker is now looking like the new normal or something. It's just because everything else on the other side has gone just way off into the wild blue yonder. So I think that this just signifies how crazy things have gotten, that you've got Republicans now pushing this, which is would have been anathema 40 years ago. But I'm not surprised. I think they realize that this is something, had some of these been instituted or tried some years ago, it wouldn't look so radical, but we've gotten used to a business climate that doesn't follow any of these guidelines, whether it's tariffs or cooperating with illegal immigration and benefiting from it, profiting from it, and sticking everybody else with the bill. This has just become too ingrained for it to be now taken off the table at once, but I suspect it's going to resonate with voters. I think that's what they hope anyway. Whether any of this will ever get done or not, or in the next five public administrations, I'm going to wait to see. But it clearly shows that they're desperate at this point, because they've gotten pushed about as far as they can, I think, by the Democrats, so that they have to respond in this kind of fashion.
Well, I think that some of this stuff is a response to, even though what did we say, Kevin? There's three kinds of people in the world. Some people make things happen. Some people watch things happen, and the rest of them wonder what happened. I think a lot of people are sitting there going, "What is with all this buyback stuff? I mean, what is with these firms where the stock blows up? All of a sudden, the guy up top makes $150 million in one transaction on a stock interest, and then 2 years later, the company goes under, and every shareholder gets stuck except a few guys are ahead $150 million. I mean, I think there's some thought that somehow or another this is wrong. This shouldn't be happening like this. Why can't we do something like simple and say you get to deduct dividends, and oh, by the way, the corporation's paid the same fee as everybody else. We're trying to stop this massive concentration of wealth where nobody pays dividends or very few, and this concentration of wealth in these places. And oh, by the way, Kevin has been talking about it lately, and this also has happened in the nonprofits. Look at the amount of money that Notre Dame has, that Harvard has. These massive contributions of wealth that are not really companies. There is no dividend. There's no ownership, and yet it's hard to say there's no profit. I mean, I think a lot of this is coming from this vague idea that stuff is just not working. It's not the same as it used to be, or people's attitudes aren't the same. Am I wrong?
Well, it's what's not working, but it's also, who's benefiting? Because, you know, benefits are accruing to the top end of the economic spectrum more than I can ever remember. And so we have that working in here. You think of this as, okay, it's not a conservative, it's not a historically conservative type of agenda, and that's true. What it is it's A, it's populist, but B, it's also, it's partisan. It's partisan because who is, you know, the wealthiest people, the CEO right now is overwhelmingly liberal. But what's interesting about it is that you got all these people who, you know, are front and center talking about liberal policies, but they live like, you know, your typical conservative, you know, your Mr. Potter fat cats, you know, where they live in gated communities and they live for tax strategies and they, you know, all of those kinds of things that we allegedly, you know, that as liberals allegedly they fight, but at the same time you turn around and in their lives they're behaving differently. So there's, you know, like a big hypocrisy factor there. But this is an agenda that is targeted specifically at that group.
Okay, but let's back
that
up.
That makes more sense of it, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, except let me quiz Kevin a second here, Jan. And if you look at the people that have, let's look at the Zuckerbergs, those kinds of guys. Guys that some of my dividend and tax policy is going to sneakily try to basically give them a shiver in the back. But what did I just say that? We look at those guys. Now, somehow or another, you know, the Zuckerbergs and the Bezos of the world that start buying newspapers and publishing their own crap and stuff, that is a group that has been allowed to get way too big in my mind. But I'm going to say, Kevin, if you and John walked around the people that run, like, the trading firms, the people that run the manufacturing firms that Kevin's talking about, and we went to the mid, like, the guys that run, you know, my nephew's metal placing, I'm going to say most of your CEOs are not liberal.
No, they're not, but they're also not the beneficiaries of current administration's policy or any big government policy.
What I'm saying is, right now,
I don't even want to make it a Democrat Republican thing, although to some extent this is, but who is getting the benefit of putting their nose up the butt of government? It is not the small manufacturing company. That's not who's getting it. It's the people. It's the larger corporations.
Well, it's the pharmacies and the hospitals, but. Do you think that, how do I get this, how do I say this, I'm not trying to be argumentative, but I think those people just run with whoever they can get. I don't know if they vote Democrat or Republican. I don't even know if they vote. It's too much
trouble. You can look at things like, look at public television or NPR or really, I think, any arts organization of any size, whether it be theater, music, museums, you name it, that are, you know, ostensibly nonprofit and you know, some get some federal money, but also get lots of private contributions and charge admission. And you look at the compensation packages for people at the top of these organizations, and you think, what the age?
I mean, yeah.
It looks completely out of whack. And especially in like communication organizations like the Chicago Public Radio running the Sun-Times, and, you know, the Sun-Times runs full page ads looking for contributions to keep Chicago Public Radio, i.e. the Sun-Times, going. But these are clearly tilted political operatives. That, you know, it's a shame that they get any kind of taxpayer money when they have no use for half of the taxpayers in the country.
Well, how early in his analysis was our friend Eric when 10 years ago he said the issue is this management class. They didn't invent anything, they don't own anything, but they run everything and think they deserve it.
There was a good article, and I know I've shared it, I think I've even discussed it on the air, but back when Trump, you know, when he first won, and it was, you know, what do people not understand about the working class? And, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, one of her, and God, I can't remember the woman's name who wrote it, you know, very, very left-wing woman. So she, you know, so it was, I'll fish it out. But the point of it was essentially that the average working class person doesn't begrudge someone getting rich, but what they do hate is these people who come in with their college degrees and think they know, and who want to tell them what to do but don't know shit about what they do. And that was basically how she worded it. And, you know, that is resented. That is what Eric was talking about with the management class too. They're going to come in, they're going to tell everybody the way it should be. They're going to compensate themselves quite well, even if it's at the expense of many other people. And so that's part of where populism comes into play as well.
Well, there was a guy, and
that's why it plays so well.
Right. Well,
but the thing of it is, I think you'll agree, economics is neither right nor left. It just is. I mean, when you do stuff, these people benefit and other people don't. I mean, and whatever side you are, when you do something, I think you need to think about what you just did. You can't, you know, have some of the policies for the last 15, 20 years and then expect them not to have a problem. And you can't, does anybody really think that your utilities give a crap about their shareholders? Does anybody think that, you know, Warren Buffett gives a crap about it? I mean, he can say that, yeah, the stock's going up. The stock's not going up because of him. The stock's going up because it's being blown up by currency valuations. But do you think, you know, think some guy making, first of all, look at a nonprofit. Look at the size of those places. They don't have any shareholders. And what's the discipline on Harvard or Notre Dame or the foundation at Vanderbilt? I mean, who are they beholden to? At least in a profit organization, there's some discipline to it. But how many places are even like that now? You think Amazon is, you know, does that guy really care? I mean, about the shareholder. I mean, he cares because he is one, but I don't know. It just seems like we're all totally off the rails here. Why don't we just put it back on the rails economically instead of having all these crazy policies?
Well, Disney is a good example of, you know, a for-profit that has just, you know, turned its back on shareholders pretty much, with the kind of, you know, philosophical changes they have in the movies they produce and the marketing and things that you would think would be so abhorred by the stockholders. And they keep losing money, you know, turning people off, and nothing changes. It isn't like this has, you know, fostered any kind of revolt against it. But I agree that these stockholders mean nothing to the people but that.
What's the line from 20 years ago? Dividends? Why should I give money to perfect strangers? I mean, but these are, when you have a country that's built on a system, and all of a sudden the system sort of isn't working. Now, what could cause it to work? I mean, I guess it wasn't working in 1929 either, right? So some massive crash, some massive come to Jesus moment, and all of a sudden it took us a decade of living like crap and a world war to pull us out of it. We really don't want to have to do that again, do we?
I mean, now, and I'm just about to email it to you, and I can tweet it for our listeners. I did find the article, and if you really want to understand, the populist thinking, the author is Joan C. Williams, and she is a professor at the she's Yale educated, MIT master's degree, JD at Harvard. And so, she's out of that thought place. She's a big, her life's work is about women in the workplace. She runs the Center for Work-Life Law. So we're not talking, right wing here by any means. And if you know anything about her, she definitely isn't. But she wrote a great article called What So Many People Don't Get About U.S. Working Class. And she also has a book out that she wrote about the same time called White Working Class, Overcoming Class Cluelessness in America. And this is really written by someone who has a pretty good finger on the pulse of where the working class, how the working class perceives the economy now and how they perceive politics now. And I think if you even read the article, that will give you some insight into what's behind these policies, and you can see why, neither Democrat nor Republican in anybody who's been around for a long time, the people that the hardcore right always calls rhinos, but whether it's the McConnells or anything, they don't have a clue about this either. So, this is part of, where the fight is now. And I think that sort of explains a lot about what you wanted to discuss, which is this list of economic policies.
Well, it comes down to, I think a lot of it has to do with, I remember being in class like it was yesterday. He was such a brilliant man when one of the signature answers of all my years in school was somebody said to George Stigler, why don't we run politics like a business? And he said to the guy, it is run like a business, you just don't understand it. And this shows you that...
Well, but what it's not, and what I think most people are saying when they say that, is they're saying, why don't we run it like a for-profit business in a free market?
Okay, but I mean, but these guys...
That's definitely not the business,
But now, we collectively, the three of us are never going to change, but we collectively, as a society, have sort of changed people's idea about work. The idea of somebody going somewhere for 8 hours, putting your nose to the grindstone, and doing something without access to your cell phone, to your email, and actually what you and I would call like work, nobody wants to do that. I mean, what percentage of the population does that, for God's sake? You can hire workers at your house, maybe you're minorities or something, they might think that way, but the rest of the world, what do you mean? You actually want me to show up, let alone leave my phone at the door? I mean, we're looking for... A lot of things have changed to the point where the politicians, they don't... Anybody who thinks that people on the right or the left that are politicians have this vision, I mean, there might be a few people that do. The rest of them just want to win. And whatever... I mean, if you take a liberal guy and throw him in a conservative district, guess what the guy's going to say the next day? He's going to say whatever he needs to say. And I think this list of stuff here is essentially, the right's reaction to that. They want to win. They don't want to be left on the side of the road. Am I right or wrong?
I don't think the agenda you're talking about is what is coming from the right. It is not an agenda that Mitch McConnell would ever have endorsed.
No, and Mitch McConnell's 110 years old, and he's gone. They want to win next election. They don't care about the last one.
Yeah, who's going to replace McConnell?
I don't know. Who could
another
possibly?
Another octogenarian, I fear. I mean,
hey, yeah. Careful. I mean, you know, I don't have a problem with age.
You're hoping to be one of those, aren't you?
Yeah, we're hoping to be
at least,
one.
At least a septuagenarian, please.
Yeah, yeah, at least something. Just remember, everybody, old people are always 10 years older than you at any age. But yeah, but you do wonder on some of that. I mean, have what's happened now in some of the economy. I still think that the solution is to get back to the competitive basics. You know, hey, stop having 17, 19-year patents on drugs where people can charge whatever they want. They're sucking the lifeblood out of this economy. And what did Carl say yesterday? 40%? The Medicare, Medicaid taxation is 40% of what the government's spending on it? That's not sustainable. Now, how do we let... What is a... Jan, would you want to brought this up? A night in a hospital in Chicago now is $11,000. 20 years ago was what? One? 1500 maybe? Can't do that. We don't have the money. We just don't have it. You can't... cities can't pay people 50 years on pension for 20 years work. I don't care how good they were. They can do something else. I'm not forcing somebody... I just see these amazingly non-equal, whatever you want to use the term, something that just can't be, and there they are all over the place, right? I mean, somehow we have to fix those things, and there's a lot of oxen, a lot of people in the oil are going to get stabbed or think they're being stabbed.
So your question gets to be how many people in Congress believe that we're out of money and we can't afford it? And, you know, I don't know the answer to that, except to say that the average person, again, you get back to having a populist point of view and why that's popular right now, it's because the average person looks at it and says we can't afford it. They understand it. But in Congress, when you start to say, well, here's where I have to cut this, here's where I have to cut that, and, you know, the answer is you're trying to kill grandma, you're trying to kill off all the poor people, whatever it is. That's the demagoguery that goes with it. Because it's, you know, we have a very entrenched bureaucracy, and entrenched bureaucracies, even in private businesses, don't go away easily. Let alone in the government, they definitely don't go away easily.
Kevin, I think you're right. Except, I'll use my example with Dr. J when he was here. These are all individual fights, and I think the thing that the three of us agree on, and maybe because we love jousting with each other, it's not something that happens at the top. The top. Is all the stuff underneath it that add up to that number. The number is not the problem. It's how you get there. Yet every one of these little individual fights are really, really tough. And I'll tell you what, if I ever was in a position of power at some point and had you two guys with me, or else I wouldn't be there, nobody wants to fight these battles, Kevin and Jen. What, we wouldn't want to do it. What we do is make ourselves miserable. In the state of Illinois, what has to happen? Okay, look at the pension issue. Now, the pension issue has a myriad parts in there. We have an awful lot of people, not everybody. We have an awful lot of people that game the system. Let's say your pension's supposed to be 85% of your last year's, quote, salary. There's got to be hundreds, thousands of people that added sick time to their last year, that did something else. And they're making more than they ever made as an employee. You know what? System can't afford that. On day one, you have to say, I'm going to go back and review, and I'm going to say, anybody whose last year's salary was 100 grand and is making more than 85, guess what? You're going back to 85, and maybe you owe me the rest of it back or something. Now, I know I can't do that. Plus, I don't want to fight that battle. I also want, in the state of Illinois, how many people are getting two pensions? Okay, you work for the county for 20 years.
How many
years.
Are you getting four, Tom?
I'm being simple. You work for the county for 20 years. Now you're working for the state for 20 years. You get two pension. No, you don't. Maybe we cut you back to a pension and a half or something, but you're not getting two. Nope, none of the three of us want to fight that battle. I made the joke the other day because I used to tell Dr. J that. He was always bragging about the tax code. And I was this, that, and the other thing. I said, Jan, I'll tell you what. You're not going to find anybody that agrees with him more than I do. I said, but let me get, next week, here's your two jobs. What are those? I said, well, the restaurant show's in town. I want you to go over there and give a big speech talking about how much better it would be if tax meals were not deductible. Now they've come way back on that, by the way. I'm talking a while ago. And why I'm sitting there having a bottle of wine and some fancy joint, and I'm paying $100 a bottle. And oh, by the way, you're buying the same bottle, and the government's eating a third of that. Tell me why the government should do that. You know, if you're on the road, give somebody a $50 a day stipend for eating out at home or something. That's fine, but you're not taking a bunch of people out to dinner, and it's on us, type of thing. I said, and if you survive that, I'm going to send you over to the NFL and tell them that the deductibility of tickets, no more deductibility of tickets. Why the hell should you get your tickets deductible? Nobody else gets them deductible.
Let alone your suite.
Yeah, let alone your suite. And if you survive that, come on back on the show tomorrow. We'll do a show. He goes, I get your point. I mean, these are all massive battles. Now, why are they battles? Well, because your restaurants spend millions of dollars on places. And again, you don't get anywhere near the deductibility now you used to. I think there is a limit to it, isn't there? I'm not a tax guy, but look at the industry. Would every one of these restaurants be millions of dollars a place if that wasn't part of it? If you just stripped that away tomorrow, what do you do to people? What if you got rid of the mortgage deduction tomorrow? Oh my God, you can't do that. But you and I, all three of us, know that nothing is stupider than a tax deductibility for mortgage interest. It makes prices of houses go higher, makes rents go lower. I mean, it causes this great disappropriation of economics. And over time, you can't just stop it tomorrow, can you? And how do you do this?
You can't even phase it out.
Well, you have to phase it out. But I'm saying every one of these battles would be a four-year fight. Is it worth it?
Well, and the problem with it is, even if you could make it all happen in your time, and you build this wonderful glide path so that it can really, be implemented without, totally shocking the economy. Cool, you do that. Would it survive your next administration?
Would it survive?
And the answer to that, of course, is going to be no. Now we're going to pick it all apart and reshape it and, make it look like it used to look.
Well, you would think that if they're good enough ideas that they'd hang in there, but now it's constant. Does anybody really think that the founding fathers? I don't want to turn into Scalia, where I knew what they were thinking. Actually, if you went back and read all the notes for all those meetings, you actually probably could figure out what they were thinking. But does anybody really want a government where every 4 years somebody rips up all the other guys' executive decisions and starts with all new ones? Isn't that why we're supposed to have a Congress? That there's supposed to be some stability to this?
Well, but now we're governed by executive orders, so half of the energy is spent on undoing the last administration's executive orders, new ones, and the legislative agenda, and the purview of the legislature is just put to the side. I mean, COVID is the worst example of that ever. So, but that's now become sort of entrenched. I think it'll be the same problem the next time around. When there's any health emergency, executive orders are going to rule the day, and we'll have governors deciding health policy, not the legislatures. So,
well, one of the interesting attitudes on this, and you guys ever read George Marshall's Soldier and Statesman?
No.
There was one part in there about the there's a war on. Hey, there's a war on. And how some of the generals would always be complaining that the hardest thing in the world to do is to fight a war when you essentially work for a democratic government. And George Marshall's point was, that's why we're fighting the war. And he never had any problem. Evidently, the guy who was the biggest hard ass about military spending was Truman. I mean, he didn't, he knew there was a war on, but he didn't want anybody wasting money. He wanted to make sure if you bought the tanks, they were the right tanks, they came in under budget, they went out for bid. And the generals just hated the guy.
Oh, well, yeah. And he took a lot of heat in his own party for his recommendations during the war. But this is before he's vice president, of course.
But I mean, Marshall never had a problem with him. He said he's doing.
Oh, no.
He said he's doing.
Marshall was cut from the same cloth, really.
Yeah, he said he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. And by the way, if we can't justify this thing, we shouldn't be coming in front of him. And yet, nobody believed that except him. You know, so I mean, there are people who actually think that we can do this in a democracy. I mean, it's never going to be perfect, but I'm one of those people. I actually think you can do this. The Congress can do their job even today. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like they're doing it, does it?
It sure doesn't.
You know, I don't quite understand that. I really do think that you can take the most right wing knothead and the most left wing knothead, put them in a room, and put up 20 things, and 15 of them they agree on. Let's just work on the 15. We seem to have lost that ability somehow. Okay, well, there's gonna be five we're never gonna agree on, but let's work on the other ones. Remember that movie? The TV miniseries was it the Accidental President or something where was it Kiefer Sutherland was the end of the bench cabinet guy, and they blew up Congress and everybody got killed. Congress.
Oh, Survivor.
Yeah, was a designated survivor, right?
Yep.
And they got all the both sides got together, even though the Congress is all dead. They came and couldn't agree on anything, and the solution was, we'll appoint four essentially conservative Supreme Court people and four liberal. And when I'm out of office, whoever the next president is, either me or somebody else, then we'll appoint the ninth. Because his point was, look, out of 100 cases that comes in front of them, maybe three or four are these landmark, you know, maybe it's more than that now. He said eight people can survive, can do the rest. They're not all going to be 4-4. Most stuff, you just got to do stuff. I mean, I thought, I was on TV, I'm thinking, put it, I would never have thought of it. That's brilliant. I mean, right? I mean, it seemed like it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Kevin, we kept you so much and we got to go to break. How about when we come back, Jan and I will fight about other stuff. SP Futures down 8.25, NASDAQ Futures down 2. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Norfolk Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom O'Andrew on the board. S&P Futures down 875. NASDAQ Futures down 2. There's a little headline here. Amazon expects to give Alexa an overhaul for AI. I don't know. Andrew, isn't Alexa IBM? Or where am I? Or is it Amazon?
Alexa?
Well, Alexa's. Yeah, which one's...
Yeah, that's Amazon.
Okay, what's the IBM one? That's the...
I'm not familiar with. I'll Google that real quick.
Yeah, at a monthly subscription price. That's wild. And with Dow futures down 84, individual stocks in the Dow. I got Goldman Sachs down 264. Rest of the stuff just a minorly red here. Nothing crazy. I got Caterpillar down 3. The big news today, obviously, is going to be NVIDIA. Stock is trading up 309 to 956.95. See, over in Europe, we've got the... these guys are lower. UK inflation numbers came in bad. DAX down 61.3%. FTSE down 57.7%. Kick around down 57.7%. Inflation numbers, everybody keeps thinking they're going to be better, and they're just not. I'm just, no opinion there. They're just not. Nikkei down 329.8%. Hang Seng down 25.1%. Shanghai up 57 cents. Let's call that one flat. So Nikkei down a little bit, but the Nikkei's been up. You know, it still can't make it back to 40,000. I think it did get there once. U.S. yesterday, Dow was up 66. S&P up 13. NASDAQ down 30, up 37. Bonds, up 4 basis points, 4.45. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.54. Japan up 3 basis points, 1.01. Wow. Never thought I'd get back to there. Like I say, by tomorrow, I'll dig a little in. The last time we were at 1% on the Japan 10-year. I think it's been a real long time. Oil down 74 cents, 77.92. Again, made a run towards 80, and now we're back in the high 70s. Brent down 83 cents, 82.05. Natural gas down 4 cents, 2.63. RBOB down 4 cents, 247. We've got gold. Had a huge run up, but coming back again today a little bit. Down 10 to 24.15. Silver down 21 cents, 31.86. Copper down 17 cents, 493. We've got the dollar is pretty much unchanged. 108 against the euro, and 127 against the pound, kind of where we've been stuck. And we have crypto up 284, 69,726. Andrew, we got Forest Traffic Weather Sports. Cubs win.
All right. Yes, they do. It is Wednesday, May 22nd here in Chicago. It's 7:45 in the morning. Starting off with did a little bit of sports. We have all wins from our favorite baseball teams here. The Diamondbacks won against the Dodgers 7-3. The White Sox won over the Blue Jays 5-0, and the Cubs won against the Braves 4-3. Over to Chicago weather, it's currently 65 degrees. We have partly sunny skies. That's going to stick around most of the day. We're going to have a high of 78 around 5 p.m. And over in Phoenix, they're currently at 65 degrees. They got clear skies. They are going to have a high of 95, and that's going to be around 5 p.m. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, things are pretty heavy in the red today. Expect some delays coming in from nearly every inbound expressway. I think you're only going to be looking at some clear roads if you're on the outbound Stevenson, and it looks like on the Dan Ryan as well. Doesn't look like any major accidents to report, but things are pretty heavy if you're coming in from the north or the west. So that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
John, you're my, you and Audrey and Nancy are my real estate experts, accident expert. There's a column here by Diana Olick, who's on CNBC all the time. I think she does a great job. Here's where rents are rising and where they're falling. It says multifamily rents in April were 0.8% lower than they were at the same month last year. Single-family rents are much stronger, up 3.4%. What in God's name is a multifamily rent?
Well, if you take an apartment in a 4-flat or a 44-flat.
Okay, building. Okay, all right. All right, so now a single-family, what, you're renting a house?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so yeah, I mean, that confirms what our real estate ladies are saying. Oh, that's the rents are to the moon. When do you think, if ever, that the CPI is ever going to catch up with the real increase in rents over the last 4 years, ever? Do you think they, I don't know, as much as they seem to want to delay or lie. Do you think they'll just never catch up?
Well, I don't think they'll catch up in a real world where these numbers were actually trustworthy and weren't being tweaked constantly by removing stuff or, you know, diminishing its effect on the total number at the end or hiding it some way. I just don't see that there's any kind of willingness to let these numbers speak for themselves. So this is why we get these ridiculous numbers, you know, the CPI numbers every month, which to me don't tell any kind of a story that is recognizable to anybody who's looking at the numbers. So until all of that changes and they make people actually trust these numbers again, I don't see any reason why we're going to get, you know, a better reflection of what's really happening. There's every reason now, I think, to hide the extent of the damage and to keep people in the dark about how bad things really are for them. And they keep gaslighting them by saying, I don't know where you're getting your data from because things look really good. You must be living in a very, you know, odd part of the country where you're experiencing what you say you are. But, you know, they can't let on the fact that people are really as bad off as they are. The numbers, of course, could confirm that if they were structured differently, but they're not. And I don't think they're ever going to be, really. Well, there's too much political, you know, control at stake if you, you know, can hide these numbers or prevent the numbers from resonating the way they should.
Well, John, I think, you know, I mean, God, I'm sure I'll see you, if not before next week, for sure next week. But, I'm kind of an economic conspiracy theorist kind of guy because I've seen these numbers. I don't know why I keep looking at this stuff. I should have just got like a regular job coming out of Notre Dame and not even gone to grad school, because all it's done is given me this curiosity that you can't do anything with. Anyway, I guess my question to you is, let's say, for instance, you and I are in power somewhere, oh God, and all of a sudden some numbers come out. On the one hand, we probably wouldn't have to say anything because people already know that these are bad numbers, and somewhere down the line, somebody might find a way to adjust the number or do something. Let's say, for instance, since COVID, let's be ridiculous here. Let's say rents have doubled, and we don't want to say they're doubled. Now we're going to adjust them. We're going to we'll find an area maybe where they haven't doubled and overweight that area. There's all kinds of, you know, I'll say BS stuff we can do with these numbers to where we sort of justify to ourselves that, especially if we really think they might be going to come back down, that somehow or another we're going to, I use the term, smooth this out, right? And people have been doing this, you know, kind of forever, really, I think, to various degrees, especially if you think it's an anomaly and it's going to come right back. Well, say it doesn't come back. Even if you and I don't really want the numbers out there, I mean, are we talking 15 years from now we're never going to admit the rents have doubled? Or somehow, even with our adjustments, does it come percolating through the system even little bits at a time in a way to catch up? In which case, you know, now we're still in power somehow. That now they're not going up, and yet every month they show them going up like 0.5% or 1%. In other words, can you keep it down forever? Or at some point, if you're really just finding crazy ways to mask it, that all of a sudden the ways you're doing to adjust it or your adjustments start to work out screwy. But can you do it forever? They've done it forever in the medical area by saying it's only 7% of the basket when it's 20. No, but rent isn't like that. Rent is, you know, 25-30% of what you spend your money on. Actually, residence is like 30-some%. Do you think they can keep it down forever without going to something like they're doing in medical, all of a sudden saying your rent is 5% of your paycheck, which is even more bizarre?
Well, you know, the history of this is, I think, important to remember. There were always situations where there were tremendous fluctuations in rent. That doubling of rents was not unusual in certain periods of history. In my own case, Tom, before I bought the place I'm at now, I lived in Logan Square. This is back in the 90s. And Charming building, 18-room apartment building. Lots of wonderful features. It has some, you know, deferred maintenance in it, but it was a great place to live.
Why do you always pick areas that nobody can get to?
Yeah, but oh, it was great. I mean, it's right off the expressway. Blue Line goes there. There's, you know, buses galore. And even if you wanted to walk, it was a beautiful neighborhood to walk in. So it had lots of reasons why it was, you know, a good place to live. And the rents were, you know, like $400 or $500 for a one-bedroom apartment, a small one-bedroom apartment in the building where I lived. Well, the building got sold in 1995, and the new owner doubled everybody's rent. So, you know, this was a shock, but there were no problems renting to people because everybody who rented an apartment after that, you know, rent increase was coming from Lakeview, where they couldn't afford the rent there, or Lincoln Park, and they came to this building where they just doubled the rents, and these new tenants thought they were getting the deal of the century. Oh, what a cheap place this is.
Yeah, but you only got broken into once a week. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, right. That's the sign of an up-and-coming neighbor.
Yeah.
Broken into all the time. But the idea was that absolutely no amenities were provided, no decorating allowances, no improvements, you know, no appliances, nothing for this, you know, 100% jump in the rent. But this was typical as neighborhoods became so pricey. There were other neighborhoods that were on the way up too, and you could get away with, you know, jumping rents like that and having no shortage of people who could qualify for them and were happy to move in and thought they were still saving money. That's changed now. I think that the idea that there is, you know, that kind of affordability, that you can just, you know, jump the rents 100% and you'll still have a steady supply of qualified tenants, that isn't the situation anymore. So,
well, that was very localized.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's always local. You know, there's always, you know, that's why it's hard to extrapolate trends if you're looking at a market like Chicago, which is from soup to nuts, from the, you know, the very high end to the very low end, with you know, sometimes not very much in between. So it's, and that is changing constantly as neighborhoods become more desirable, less desirable, as the population shifts, and as happening now with when people are moving out of Chicago in numbers that, you know, J.B. Pritzker doesn't want to admit, it seems. But that's going to change the supply of people who are ready, you know, to step up to the plate and pay whatever the landlord is asking for. I think that is not going to be the trend, you know, for the next 10, 20 years. It's going to be in the opposite direction. You won't be able to give apartments away in a lot of neighborhoods.
Jen, what do you make? I mean, there's, when you talk about Chicago, there's so many things. I don't know if you, I hope you didn't, but matter of fact, I have not talked to my former producer, Mr. Matt Weber. The final demonized tally this weekend, I know I'm hopping around, but it's really, I'm not hopping around. 3 killed, 47 wounded this weekend. And we had a 3 lot on Friday night at 5500 West Quincy. We had a 6 people shot, which should be national news anywhere else, right? It's 700 South Albany in Garfield Park on Saturday. And I think there was somebody here. What night was it? It might have been 3200 West Irving Park, which is a half a block away from Matty Weber, where Matty Weber just moved. That's not good. And then we had another 3 lot here at 500 North Leamington. We had a couple of 2 lots on Sunday. But now my question is, one of my attorney buddies told me last night, guess how many arrests? 3 killed, 3 killed, 47 wounded. Come on. You know, we can be cynical, but we don't want to be that cynical, do we?
Were there any arrests?
No. No.
Yeah, of course not.
I mean, does anybody...
There are very few tips or leads to Tom.
There's nobody around. There's no police out. They're there, but they're not. We're talking, you know, 50 people. For God's sake, you would think if you had a police force like you did 30 years ago, just driving around in neighborhoods, you'd stumble onto one of these things once in a while, wouldn't you? Just by random chance.
There mustn't be anybody to look at.
What was the case this past weekend where there was a home invasion and, you know, the victim called the police and waited 4 hours for somebody to come?
Well, and then when you...
Yeah, but somebody in her apartment.
But then whenever there's a shooting, there's 25 squads, not 25, but show up and they spend all night looking for... Well, that means they're happy as hell to be there and not somewhere else actually looking for the next one. And what is... Who decided that this is okay?
And it wasn't me.
But I guess, you know, I'm trying to tie together a lot of different things here because, you know, obviously you come in the morning and you're beset by news on every front. Who decided that somehow or another that the people doing this stuff have more political power than the people getting shot? These are decisions being made by people. This isn't just being, you know, it's not just a random happening. Somebody's decided that we're better off not going after anybody. I mean, who makes that call?
Did you read Kim Fox's recommendations? I mean, why she gets any kind of platform to make any recommendations now that she's a lame duck is beyond me. But the policy she's pushing is that there, you know, any kind of, you know, arrest for non-violent offenses, like say somebody doesn't have their seatbelt on, or didn't signal, or didn't stop, or whatever. If there's any, if you make a stop for those kinds of offenses, you have to ignore things like guns in the front seat or drugs in the front seat or any other suspicious things.
Why would you do that?
In any kind of, well, why would you do that unless you wanted to completely destroy the reputation of any kind of law enforcement agency as being utterly useless? And what's worse, Tom, is that, you know, after this came out, Eileen O'Neill Burke, who's a Democratic candidate, had no comment. This is the one who's supposed to be, you know, if she wins, she'll be stepping into this position. If anybody should have an opinion on this, it would be she. And her idea was, well, I have nothing to say about it. Well, that makes me think she's just okay with this. So,
well, in keeping with my somewhat of a theme here, when we got a dash, that politicians will do whatever they have to do to be in office, and they run the business like their own business. Where does somebody feel that there's more votes on that side of the fence than on the other side? I mean, John, to be perfectly blunt, you and I are getting outvoted. I mean, and the question is,
well, we're getting outspent by people who have this agenda, and you know, the money that people like Kim Fox and a whole host of other politicians get from God knows what sources, who are ideologically driven in ways that the average voter, can't compete with. When you can't get out and ring doorbells in big enough numbers to make a difference when you got millions of dollars being thrown at some candidate to push that agenda, it's going to drown out any other kind of response.
But Jen, the numbers ought to be, what are we down to in Chicago? 2.6 million, 2.7 million, somewhere in there?
We're slipping every day.
Slipping, sliding away. That was a song, right? There's still, let's say it's 2.7 million. There's 26,800 that are still law-abiding people here and understand that there's a bad element that you got to, you know, whatever times of society, whatever generation or millennium you're from, that sort of have to be dealt with. We don't know why some people can't figure out how to live, but some people can't. And
well, it's clear now, Tal, that people see that the only solution is not to get out and vote in bigger numbers, but just to leave. And I think that kind of explains some of the apathy.
But that's,
you would think that this would
cause, that's really awful because, I mean, but why anybody would ever consider the shooters? I mean, it's not like, you know, back in the Prohibition days where the drinkers probably that they ignored the law probably outnumbered the non-drinkers. I don't see where these guys get the political power. So we're no. Let's vote a mayor that says we're not going to get arrested for shooting people. How does that even fly as a platform? And yet it seems to be winning.
Totally trash on all the media, sources nationally would be, well, here's a fascist mayor. Nobody could do what Rudy Giuliani did in New York back in the 80s and 90s. I remember people I knew in New York saying, oh my God, we have fascists as a mayor, but thank God we do.
Well, you know, he was he had the world's best police chief. And as soon as the police chief started to get some notoriety on his own. He couldn't wait to get rid of him because he was such a pompous ass. He always has been. Giuliani was all about him. You know, why didn't he just give credit to the police chief? He didn't want to, though. He got rid of him, right?
Well, are we talking about Bernie Kerik?
Yeah.
Well, he was, I mean, there were other reasons for getting rid of Kerik, I think.
But well, I mean, but Giuliani, the main reason was he started to get more press than Giuliani.
But this is, my point is just what you're saying, that, you know, he has been, you know, trashed publicly because of his association with Trump, and they're going after his law license and arresting him on his, indicting him on his birthday and all this other nut stuff. But at the time, he did what, you know, I don't think any other mayoral candidate was prepared to do or to make succeed. And that's when New York flourished. It grew.
Well, there's
it
no
was
doubt.
Safe. What? The tourism industry went nuts.
You're not getting any disagreement on me. I'm saying that he always was kind of you know.
Right, but that's what it takes. It's going to take some kind of gadfly or maverick who has no time for the nut stuff that we have to see. It seems like we have to put up.
First of all,
in this country.
Let's put it this way. You and I feel that way, but we want the job. I don't want to do
well,
that.
I don't have the nerve or the stamina to see it through.
I want part of it.
Anybody who did have it, I don't think would get elected.
Well, we talked about, look at the fights we have to do here just with the pensions. Well, you and I wouldn't want to do that. That's why nobody does it.
Hell, I wouldn't run for a local school council.
Do you think, I mean, we rail on Obamacare, we got a dash. We rail on Obamacare, and rightfully so, how the thing turned out. But nobody rails on George Bush seeing the incredible mess in the industry and ignoring it for the 8 years he was there. That's just as big of a sin. Nobody bitches at him. Oh, gee, I got this huge problem, but I'm not going to tackle it. Boy, that's too tough for me. See, I'm going down to Texas for the weekend. I mean, duh.
I got another speech to make over here. I'll get back to you.
I'll get back to you. I mean, why do you think these problems fester? Because nobody wants to deal with them. You think Pritzker wants to spend his next 4 years pissing off all the people in the they're getting pensions? He'll find a way to pay for it.
Well, he won't do it because, you know, the unions will drop him like a hot potato if he does.
That's what I'm saying. Even if I actually think, I mean, I won't say come to be a big fan of him, but I don't know that we've had anybody that's more fiscally knowledgeable than this guy since he's been there. I think he's learned a hell of a lot. And actually, it used the COVID money way better than the mayor has. I mean, I think there's I get that, but I'm saying Illinois is in way better shape than they were when the guy took office. Now, a lot of it is because of that, the federal money and stuff, but I think if he were to sit down here and do the show, he knows exactly what we're talking about with his pension stuff.
The schools are worse. Not that he has control over them, but he, as long as they continue to decline, I don't care what kind
of
fiscal.
You think they are statewide or just in the city?
Statewide.
Well, how much of that's COVID?
It's a total mess, Tom. I mean,
how much of that's COVID?
Who's going to move to Illinois because of its schools?
How much of that is COVID?
It's been going on long before COVID, where the test scores have been, you know, collapsing.
All right, we're over time here. Let's kick this around next week. Who knows? Long weekend. Maybe I'll even see you. You're back in town, right? You're not going out of town this weekend.
No, I've got gearing up for our reunion, Tom.
What do you
got to
do?
What
do you mean? Your sack drawer is ready to go.
I'm staying 2 nights.
Yeah, you know, same thing. I've been around for 2 nights. Well, Friday will be fun. We'll ditch all the rest of the knuckleheads and we'll go out with Kevin and a few others. I'll bet we get some hangers on.
I hope.
I think the Donovans might be with us. And if he's with us, then maybe John Short, who knows?
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. Kevin will be our maestro. Maybe he'll even pay. Who knows? Kevin's got all kinds of dough.
I think we can treat him.
Yeah, we can treat Kevin. Actually, if Dunneman's there, we should make him pay. SP Futures down 9, NASDAQ Futures up 4. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking NVIDIA pretty much the whole show. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.